Thank you so much, the both of you, for taking the time out of your very, very busy schedules to join us. I know you're involved in many different projects and also teaching engagements, and we always appreciate you taking the time to share your experience and wisdom about homeopathy. For those of you who are not familiar with our speakers this evening, Linda Johnston is a medical doctor who has been an active member of the homeopathic community worldwide since the inception of her homeopathic practice in 1986. After completing her medical training from the University of Washington in 1979, she had one further year in family medicine. She then started her own private medical practice in 1981. Linda began her medical training in 1986 and began practicing the same year. Now, Linda's main focus has always been her clinical practice of homeopathy, which she continues to this day. She's also been contributing to the homeopathic community through the writing and teaching. From 1991 through 1996, she developed and taught a two-year homeopathy program in four different U.S. cities to train licensed medical practitioners. She's also a well-known international homeopathic instructor and lecturer. She's the author of numerous articles for homeopathy journals. She's also the author of the scholarly additions to the homeopathic repertory from Kent's Lectures on Homeopathic Materia Medica, as well as a popular book for the general public, Everyday Miracles, Homeopathy in Action. Since her debut public lecture in 1987, she's made hundreds of radio, television appearances, in addition to print media interviews, educating the public about homeopathy. Linda's current projects include a book on the treatment of children using the new techniques in homeopathy, A Child's World, expected to be published in March of 2010, and additionally, she is co-authoring with her husband, Franz Vermeulen, a comprehensive work on plants and plant families. Also, Linda, did you also write a small book on sepia as well?
Oh, yeah. Many years ago, I wrote a book on sepia that went through the repertory and looked at rubrics and put them in grouping so that the rubrics that were similar to each other could be grouped together instead of scattered throughout the repertory. It wasn't so much about, well, it was about sepia, of course, but it was really also an exercise in helping people understand the repertory better, helping them look at rubrics and understand the depth of what each rubric was meaning and what it was trying to communicate.
I always found that to be a gem of a little book and quite useful in practice, so thank you for putting that together. And for those of you who don't know, Dr. Linda Johnston is also the person who's known as the individual who actually treats, she lives in Hollywood, or actually she used to live in Hollywood, and she's treated many very famous individuals in that community, so she's sometimes referred to as the homeopath to the stars. Our second speaker or interviewee this evening is Franz Vermeulen. Franz was born in 1948 in Holland. He graduated from Teachers Training College in 1970, and he worked as a school teacher until 1978. Franz started to translate homeopathic books for work and pleasure between 1983 and 1996. He translated English and German homeopathic books, including Kent, Allen, Herring, Boricke, Borland, Tyler, Vitulkis, Vogeli, Whitmont, Miles, Morgan, and Kohler. In 1985, he wrote Kinder Types in Homeopathy, Children Types in Homeopathy, based on his experiences as both a teacher and a homeopath. In 1990, he was appointed managing director, teacher, and administrator of the School of Homeopathy in Holland. In 1992, he wrote Synoptic Materia Medica I, a very famous book, which originally emerged from remedy summaries made for the students in Holland, Ireland, and Finland. He followed that very excellent work up with another one called The Concordant Materia Medica, published in 1994. This has become a standard work. Most schools and institutions which are involved in homeopathy do recommend this work to their beginning students, and it's something that seasoned practitioners will use on a regular basis, followed by a second edition of The Concordant, including Herring's Guiding Symptoms in 1997. A third edition was printed in 2000. He also wrote, because of his interest in small remedies, a second synoptic called Synoptic Materia Medica II. And in his recent Materia Medica, which is really a tour de force, called Prisma, he introduces us to the data from numerous non-homeopathic sources as both reference material for the homeopathic Materia Medica and as the source of potential symptoms. This is a really unique work, and there's information both in Synoptic 2 and in Prisma that you simply cannot find in any other location. The significance and potential of such external data has been the subject of his numerous seminars in Europe, Israel, and Australia. He's a world-recognized international homeopathic instructor. And finally, in 2005, Franz published an astounding 800-page book focusing on the Materia Medica of bacteria and viruses, which was called Monera. And he followed that up in early 2007 with Volume 2, another really heroic work of scholarship on the fungi. For those of you who are familiar with his work, there's some of the most fastidious, well-researched, and illuminating works that we have in homeopathy. I unreservedly recommend his works to just about anybody who's interested in studying or pursuing a profession in this science and art. So again, thank you to the both of you for joining us. We know you're very busy, and we appreciate you taking the time to share all of your experience with us.
Well, I hope that we never get so busy we don't take time out to enjoy the pleasure of your company, Kim. It's all.
Oh, well, thank you, Lynn. That's very nice of you to say. So, you know, I know there's been a lot going on in your lives recently, and I'm just curious. Maybe you could share a little bit about what changes have been going on for you in the last year.
I forgot how many years ago, but I remember that I spoke to you once on a conference call from Sweden. I was standing on the little balcony I had there, and I believe it was snowing at the time in Sweden. Well, it's almost always snowing in Sweden, but at that time it was snowing. And since then, quite a lot has happened. I moved away from Sweden about 2 years ago. I'm married now to Linda, so we are living together. We're working together, and I'm part of a team for the first time in my life. Well, it would have sounded like I've been part of a team before, but I actually wasn't. I was always a lone wolf, so to speak. I did everything alone, and now I'm part of a team, so that's kind of a difference. And yeah, and the two of us, we're living here in the south of California, which is kind of different from Sweden, so to speak, and we have no snow, and spring is coming.
Fantastic.
Well, I think spring came the day we got married, but that's my own opinion.
I remember seeing you, Linda, and I saw you, and I said, so what's new in your life? And you showed me your hand, and you had a big engagement ring on there, and you said, I'm engaged. And I said, who are you engaged to? And you said, Franz Vermeulen, and you were glowing when you shared it with me. So it's so exciting for such really leaders in our community to come together and to collaborate in such a manner to promote this great science and art.
Well, and it really is a great collaboration. You asked what we're up to. I can say that what was started with Monera and fungi is now the next kingdom. If Franz had completed a book on the 138 plant families, with the same fastidious and precision and in-depth research, and I've come on board as a co-author, and we're now working on that book together. So it will not only include the research, but also emphasis on cases and how that research and those things that he comes out and finds out, not only from historic homeopathic sources, but mythology and botany and phytochemicals and so forth, and how that applies to what we see in the clinic. So this book is going to take just a little extra step forward in integrating his amazing research to show how that applies clinically. And that book will be 4 volumes. The first 2 will be available in November.
Wow, fantastic. Now, how many remedies are you planning to cover in the book in total?
I started about this project 5 years ago or 6 years ago, somewhere there. And I didn't have a real plan then. I just started out, and I usually start things which are a little bit large, so to speak. I just like that kind of mountains in front of me, which I have to climb. Anyway, so over time, I collected all the names mentioned in the various Materia Medicas and the various computer programs, etc., radar, and Synthesis is a repertory, of course, and for Sanford and David Wakenton, etc. So I came to 2,000 plant names. That doesn't mean that there are 2,000 remedies, but there are 2,000 mentioning of plants, which technically or potentially all could be remedies. Of course, they do not all exist as yet in the pharmacies, but that will come one day. But there are 2,000 mentioned, and that means that the plant kingdom is by far, but then by far, the largest of our kingdoms, and has always been that.
Franz, how did you decide on that specific 2,000? Because obviously there's, you know, hundreds of thousands of plants. How did you cull it down to those specific 2,000 that you reference?
Those 2,000 are mentioned in the various Materia Medicas or the various or the various computer programs. There are no more mentioned. Of course, there are references made to families which you know contain certain members, which we don't have. So here and there, I've taken the opportunity and the freedom, the liberty, to include a couple of plants, which I believe we should have, but don't have.
One of the other things that's quite nice about this book, and it's really exemplifying and elaborating on the family themes idea, is that after such meticulous research and so much information that Franz has found out and brought forth, it's able to see more clearly not only botanical themes and phytochemical themes, but homeopathic themes. So each group, family grouping, first of all, Franz is meticulous to put the plants in the correct family. There's been a lot of miscategorization, which he will speak about later. But then we can see what is applicable homeopathically as a homeopathic family theme. And each of the 138 chapters, which represent 138 plant families, will be talking about these themes, some proposed, some verified, and all clinically applicable.
Fantastic. And in terms of the remedies in there, are most of them proven or only a percentage proven? What's the ratio of remedies that have actually been proven and which have you derived the knowledge of in other ways?
Out of these 2,000, well, I've made whole statistics and lists, etc., which I don't recall by heart precisely. But what I've been doing is been looking at where they proved and by whom, in what period of time, and how has that developed over time. Now, in general, I can tell this: about of the 2,000 mentioned plant remedies, about 400 have something that would be called a proving. But that would include everything from a classical proving, whatever that means, but classical proving or in the Hahnemannian style, to self-experimentations, to inadvert poisonings, to meditative provings, to dream provings, to contact provings, and everything that has developed over the last decades. So 400, I would say 400 out of 2,000. But I might be wrong a couple of 10, but not much more. Now, the style, the general thing is that in the past, most of the provings come from here, from America. Most of the plant provings are from here. And most of the plant provings are from the east side of North America.
Sure.
Most of the provings are done in tinctures with very low potencies, a 1X or a 2X or a 3X, because it is a very common procedure that you see in these old days that these fellows say, well, we didn't notice anything happening on the 30X, so we went down in potency, and then things started happening. So we have done it in the tinctures. That is the normal style. And also I have seen that over the years, because, of course, this number of provings has grown over the years, that initially it's almost 90% male producing symptoms, and over time that has moved to the female side, which it is now about 70% female that produces symptoms for our Materia Medica, 30% male.
Interesting change in demographics, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And I was intrigued by one of the things that you said, which is, you know, of course, you know, when Butte and Herring went to Pennsylvania, of course they proved the local plants there, and of course Hahnemann would be proving things that were indigenous to Europe. But, you know, it's amazing. There's all these, for example, Papua New Guinea or Africa has, you know, an incredible variety of flora, which we simply are not using in our practices. So have you delved at all into any of these other areas where plants are available that have not been so largely available in our Materia Medicas?
Oh, yes, absolutely, because yeah, from one you go to the next and you get to all kind of web pages and websites and you get to researchers and professors and botanists and herbalists and all these people involved in plant remedies. So, yes, I've been in all the continents.
Fantastic. Well, it sounds very exciting. I'm looking forward to receiving my own copy. Have anything else you two have been working on in the last year that you'd like to share with us?
Well, we have some speaking engagements, and Franz has always had a full calendar speaking all over the world and talking about his research, and now for most of those we'll be going together, so he will still present the research and in his inimitable style, and it's, you know, that people have enjoyed so much, but then I will also be there to present cases to show, okay, you've heard the research, you've heard about the chemicals composition and the family groupings and the different kind of mythology and herbal use, and now let's see how this can translate into a case so you can understand what it will sound like when a patient walks in your door. So that's kind of a bridge between his work and the when you sit in your clinic. That's my job in the team. So that's what we'll do. We're going to be in San Francisco on the 27th and 28th at a seminar sponsored by Annika
Homeopathy West.
And then we also have some in April we'll be in Toronto. And so throughout the year we'll be doing this kind of work.
Fantastic. Franz and Linda, if people wanted more information about your seminar in San Francisco, how would they find out about that?
Let me look up a contact number while you're speaking with Franz, and I can provide that for you.
Okay. And I also want to mention for the people who are listening that Franz and Linda will also be presenting at the 2010 annual LIGA conference, which is actually going to be in Redondo Beach, California.
Yeah.
That's going to be from May 18th through the 22nd. It's actually the 65th LIGA Congress. So I think it hasn't happened here now for over 10 years. So if people want more information about that, they might want to go online. It's www.liga, that's L as in Larry, I, G as in goat, A, 2010.org. So www.liga2010.org, and then you can go to their site. You can see all of the various speakers, including Franz Vermeulen and Linda Johnston.
And just as an aside, the book you mentioned, my most recent book called A Child's World, which is about the new methods in homeopathy as applicable to children, we'll be actually launching that at that venue.
Oh,
so that's kind of an exciting moment for me, as in addition to the presentation with Franz.
Oh, fantastic. That's great.
And
did you get the information about how to...
I have an email address for Annika Hoagland. And
okay, great. Could you let the listeners... know
yeah.
what that is.
Okay, it's I'm going to spell it. It's Annika Hoagland. That's AnnekaHoagland at gmail.com. That's Annika Hoagland at gmail.com. And I'm sure she'd be more than happy to give you the information, and we'd love to have you there. Then you can ask questions, and you know, we can address anybody's particular concerns.
Fantastic. Now, Linda, I haven't heard you speak. I have heard Franz, and I just want to just make a little plug. On top of being so well-informed and having done such extensive research on the subject matter that he's presenting about, he also has a very exciting visual presentation in terms of the PowerPoints that he's created, and he himself is a natural teacher, so the information isn't dry and boring. It really flows, and you really get something out of it, and you walk away not only a better informed and better capable of practicing homeopathy, but really, in a sense, entertained and very happy at the end of the experience. So heard either Franz or Linda, I strongly recommend that you take the opportunity to participate.
Well, I may be accused of being biased, but before I married him, I attended his seminar, and I have to concur with you completely. He is it's just a delightful presenter, and he makes the information come alive. He does a lot of work putting together his visuals that support what he says. So I don't know how much credibility a wife has in promoting her husband, but
might be a little biased, Linda. But anyway, I'm not.
But I have to say it. these are also things people find. If you haven't heard him speak it, I certainly encourage it.
Fantastic. So getting back to homeopathy, you know, I know you've both done a lot of work with Materia Medica and a lot of research and studies. In what ways do you see that Materia Medica has changed over the years?
Well, I can speak to it from a clinical side. I think what's changed is the explosion of information. Now, there's a good side and bad side to that. Some of the information that has come on the scene isn't as reliable or applicable as we would like. But I think it still gets the fact that there is so much information, there's wonderful new provings, there's new ideas, and this is, to me, all to the good. And computer programs that can take that vast data and give us search engines so we can hone in on exactly what we want is really helpful. So the more, the better, but still it comes down to the homeopath having a discerning mind to say, you know, is this pertinent or is this valuable information? So the quality and quantity, I think, is astounding today, and it's a great, great time to be a homeopath.
Martha, did you want to say anything about that? Or?
Yeah, well, I fully agree. And, well, at the moment or over the last 10 to 15 years, I have not been doing so much clinical things anymore, actually none at all, except for a little helping out here and there. So I've been a full-time researcher for 10 or 15 years, and I've always wondered how the people in the clinic could manage with this growing material becoming more and more. So it's very exciting to see, and so to hear from so close by as from Linda, that how that is done, how you deal with this this mountain of information that comes through, these cascades of stuff that is coming out.
Well, one of the things that also has changed, which I think is a big asset to dealing with that mountain of information, is these ideas of groupings and families. Because instead of looking at 2,000 possible plant remedies, and they each are unique, and you look at the basketful of symptoms for each one, you have 138 families. So right from the start, if you can look at a family theme to get you oriented, you could say, well, it's down to these two or three families. You can immediately discard the other members of the plant family, and it just makes the job so much easier. So on one hand, we have much more information, but by the greater categorization and themes and groupings, it's much more manageable than ever before.
Linda, I'm curious, you know, I've done also a little bit of research into family groupings, and, you know, with some of the remedies within the context of a taxonomical grouping, it's very obvious that they're part of the same family. Like if you take, for example, belladonna, stramonium, and hyoscyamus, you can see a lot of similarities between those three remedies within the context of the solanaceas. But then sometimes if you look at some of the other ones, it's not quite as obvious. I'm curious, in your practice, do you find that these themes are always running through all the members or only some of the members, or do you find sometimes there are certain individual plant remedies within a taxonomical grouping that perhaps doesn't seem to fit the themes of many of the other members? What's your experience with that?
Well, my experience was certainly different before I worked on the plant book. And so I can speak from the practitioner, which was my pre-studying the plant book and now having that experience. And I agree with you completely. Before, it seemed that there were a handful of families that really lent themselves to themes that were obvious, that had a good handful of remedies that catered to those themes, and that was the nice first step. But actually, now that I've studied it more in depth, I can say that every family has, well, not every, probably about 90% of the families also have that. The problem was that unless you have lots and lots and lots of information about a family, it's harder to see the themes. So, for example, the Habsburg family, you know, the old ruling family of Austria, if you had one or two members, you really couldn't say, what's a theme? You know, is having two ears a theme, or is that just peculiar to these two, or what? But if you have 150 Habsburgs, then you can see more clearly, oh, well, you know, what is really a theme, or what is really not a theme? So what the... when I would read through the plant family information that Franz has researched and see pages and pages, I'd start seeing words that were repeated or ideas that were repeated or chemicals that were repeated that wasn't possible if you're only looking at two or three sort of unproven homeopathic remedies. So it's the volume of his research that has made almost every, well, the majority, I would say, 80 to 90% of the families have themes that are, I think, just as reliable as the obvious Solanaceae ones. Now, there are some families that only have one or two members. So, again, we only speculate, gee, these are areas that need further investigation. We need clinical support for them. But families that have 10, 20, 30, 40 remedies in, or plants in them with lots of research, wow, you know, that wealth of information lends itself to seeing patterns.
Sure, sure. And I guess there's so much work to do because, you know, there are even many groupings for which we have no remedies represented in our literature at all. Is this something the two of you are exploring as well?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We try to find at least a door or an opening or do some suggestions in which direction it may go, because that's how it went in the past and how it still goes quite frequently. The family themes are usually derived from the largest member or the largest members, which we could call the type remedy, and all the families about which we speak more freely and more we know more about them, all those have a type remedy. But that does not mean that the other members of the family are less, but we only know less of them. So Linda's absolutely right. The more you dig into the whole matter from a non-homeopathic point of view, because homeopathically there is not so much, the more you're going to see the links. So that means that the families about which we have of which we have no type remedies, yeah, then we have to appoint a type remedy, so to speak. And that type remedy will be known from another angle, maybe in herbalism or maybe in folklore or maybe something else. And that would just allow us to draw up some possibilities as we have done in the past with the type remedies that we know.
And, of course, it comes down to then taking these early steps and applying them in the clinic, taking some risks in the clinic. You know, I've discovered or had many successful prescriptions because of looking at the known information about a family theme and then seeing that in my patient and saying, wow, you know, is this really, could this be it? There's no materia medica of support of the conventional type, but here are these themes that are put forward by other workers, other homeopaths and workers in the field doing the same kind of ideas. And it's been remarkable how valuable and fruitful it is for a clinician to have this kind of information. It's one of the most useful tools I've ever run into, and it's very exciting to see it starting to blossom. And then that, of course, extends our understanding of these preliminary steps.
Sure. And, you know, then the research becomes very exciting because you realize you're doing something which can lead to greater efficacy in clinical practice. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that it's been hard in the past for some people to take raw research and be able to translate it into their clinic. I mean, it's in Prisma, where Franz wrote such in depth about many of the remedies we already knew, it added depth to what people already knew. But what about that remedy that was brand new or had very little information about it? Sometimes it's hard to make that leap. And it can be a little unnerving saying, well, you know, should I try this unknown thing that sounds kind of promising or go back to what, you know, isn't necessarily fit as well but I'm more familiar with? So by having tying together my clinical experience and his research experience, we're hoping that we can help bridge that gap and more homeopaths can have a wider palette of remedies available at their command.
Fantastic. Franz, I remember a number of years ago we had a meal together. I think it was in an Afghani restaurant in Philadelphia, and I remember we had a very interesting conversation about materia medica. So I wanted to ask both of you, what is your opinion in terms of the solidity, the foundational quality of our materia medica right now?
Yeah, well, I should choose my words very carefully now.
Okay.
Because, well, in the past I've been accused of upsetting the community a little bit every now and then because I used to say that the materia medica is kind of flimsy. but
and that was the politest thing.
Yeah, and that was polite, and you know, it doesn't sound right, or it doesn't sound well to say a thing like that. But I have proof more than plenty, and more than you really would wish to know. Let me give you this as an example. Of the 2,000 plant names that we have, one quarter is wrong. That means that either the names that we use are replaced by a synonym, so they are outdated, they're obsolete, or they have been, the plants listening to these old names have been placed somewhere else, or the names in the first place have been completely wrong. Now, in the plant kingdom, that's 25%. That's kind of a lot. But in the animal kingdom, it's much worse, for the simple reason that we're looking at the initiation of a materia medica in days that there is not so much known about the natural kingdoms, let alone the animal kingdom. I can give you an example. For instance, if you would go to Allen's materia medica, and you would read...
And let me just, for clarification, you're talking about Timothy Field Allen's encyclopedia, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
The one with the 12 volumes.
The compendium of provings up until the mid-1880s.
Yeah, well, that's the idea, that it should be provings, but of course it's a mixture of all kinds of information that he collected in his days. But if you would go to volume 5, well, I assume that no one has that at hand, but I'm just reading out of the volume, so you can check it up later. Volume 5 mentions a name called Katipo, K-A-T-I-P-O, and it says below Latrodectus Katipo. That is a black widow from New Zealand. And then it gives us as one of the sources, it gives a Dr. Fraser. And Dr. Fraser noticed the man being stung by one of these spiders, and that resulted in certain symptoms. And it says then at the top, native name, Katipo, the venomous spider of New Zealand and parts of California. Now, in the first place, that should already make you wonder, how can a spider be part of California and have his native range in New Zealand? How is that possible? It turns out now, and that's just an example of what is quite common in the old days of animal remedies, but plant remedies are not accepted, that it looked like a katipo, which has a certain look to it, and it was assumed that it would be a katipo, but a katipo doesn't occur in these parts of California. It's talking about the valley, and it's talking about the fruit trees in the valley, which are very common places where black widows live. So now we know that that particular black widow is Latrodectus Hesperus, that's the one native to California. That does not occur in New Zealand, that does not occur in the Mediterranean, this is the Californian one. So that information that is given through this man being bitten by that spider in the valley somewhere, I believe even it was in Los Angeles, that should be then replaced, not under Katipo where it stands now, but under Latrodectus Hesperus. And so there are many examples of where, because knowledge has grown over the years and we know now more than they knew 150 years ago, so therefore we are better able to categorize and place the right symptoms to the right name in the right place.
And you know, you might wonder, well, what difference does it make? If a spider is a spider, but it makes an enormous difference as we advance to the idea of looking at family themes first. So, if you're looking at a family theme or a subfamily theme, and that remedy is miscategorized, then it makes the family structure and relying on it for the themes and the symptoms inappropriate and unworkable. So the appropriate recategorization of that plant in the family it belongs to, then it's part of that theme umbrella. It's important in a way now that it really wasn't before, because we didn't rely on that. We relied on the individual characteristics, so what matters if you called it blue or red. It was, but now if it's going to belong to the blue family, it should have blue characteristics. If it's going to belong to the red family, it should have red characteristics. And so that precision is more important than ever.
So
I just want to say I couldn't agree more in terms of you know, accuracy in our literature. And I know I had a conversation with Franz. I had always assumed, for example, that Torrential Hispanica and Torrential Cubensis were actually the same species of spider. Simply, Cubensis was different in that the bottle that it was in broke and the formaldehyde leaked out and it had rotted, and that was the only difference. But after my conversation with Franz, I guess that's not correct. Is that right?
It's not correct at all. But
yeah.
It does stand in hearing. A tarantula, I just mentioned tarantula. If you would look in Guiding Symptoms of Hearing, you will see no species name. It only says tarantula. And then he has a little explanation under authorities, so clinical authorities, and there he explains about Huar, as he calls them, Howard, he calls them, but the real name is Huar. They are American doctors. There are two of them who grew up in Cuba, and one of them went back to Philadelphia, the older one, and the younger one remained in Cuba, one of these places in Cuba. And he sent his brother a file with the tincture of the spider, not the spider at all, as the story goes.
Right.
And that tincture didn't, yeah, well, it may have leaked in the boat, that's possible, but according to the story, nothing went wrong with that.
Well, you know, it's funny you should bring up this story, because, Kim, like you, one of the bedrock of my education in the very early days was this myth, you know, this,
right.
Well,
right.
You know, when we did Materia Medica, this is Torrential Cubensis, et cetera, and the broken glass and the rotting of the thing. I mean, that was just, okay, yeah, okay, fine, I learned that, and then on to the next one. It was just part of the very fabric or the cement or mortar of the foundation of all of our education. And so I can remember when Franz first told me this story, and it was like, oh my gosh, that was like the bedrock, and now it's shaken because it wasn't true, and it was on such flimsy evidence, and nobody,
yeah,
in my, even myself, bothered to question it. Well, Franz questions everything. So this was really the turning point for me in opening my eyes that we have to be more accurate and have to investigate these sources so we have a Materia Medica we can stand with firmness on.
Yeah. Well, it teaches us that 100 and 150 years ago, they prescribed on a generic level. They didn't prescribe on an individual level in terms of the Materia Medica that they used. One trillium juice could just replace another trillium. It didn't make a difference which one they would use. One bryonia could be replaced by a similar bryonia. One spider could be another spider. One snake was another snake, and so it went on. But we are now in a period where we are learning to individualize much more, and we rely on the small individual differences, which 150 years ago were not there in the first place because they didn't look for it. And the second place, they didn't have a Materia Medica to use in an individual way. It was a generic Materia Medica, the general idea of the snake. That was Lekesis. That's why everybody used Lekesis. Look at the number of clinical authorities on the Lekesis and hearing. It's pages.
Yeah, amazing.
It's amazing, but...
Yeah, I know.
That's what I
think Lekesis has got to be the most overrepresented remedy in our repertory, actually.
Well, no doubt. It probably has 11,000 symptoms or 12,000 symptoms.
Well, if anybody needs any snake remedy, you always got Lekesis, basically, you know?
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Snake is similar to Lekesis.
This is part of why it's so exciting to be a homeopath, you know, right now, because all these ideas and this is booming, and it makes it so much fun to be in the clinic. You're not limited to 40 polycrests and kind of fitting the patient to the one that fits best and changing remedy every year or two. It's really possible to individualize and go to the depth of that patient and understand their real core and say, okay, I've got a palette of 20, 30, 40, 50,000 remedies to choose from. I can see family themes. I can see other characteristics that we use to categorize, and I can really find something that's precise for that patient. And then the results are really phenomenal when you are accurate in doing that. So it's exciting.
That's great. So can you just generally sum up what ways you see that we can better use our Materia Medica so we can get really better clinical results?
Well, I think the better way is really learning the materia medica. You know, it's kind of old-fashioned of me to say, but I think a real fund of basic fundamental study and learning and attending conferences with people that have good information, and also being very careful about the information you accept. I mean, I've learned that from Franz quite clearly in his teaching me about the things that were I thought were firm ground and really were sand. But nothing really replaces having time to learn the materia medica and think about it and understand what the rubrics mean. And, you know, many times homeopaths think they can rely on intuition. And to me, intuition needs to draw on something. You need to draw on a well of knowledge that informs that gut feeling or informs that. Many homeopaths that look like they're prescribing on intuition really are. It looks that way because they have 20, 30 years of study and experience under their belt so that it comes to them naturally. You know, just as a concert pianist can sit down at any piano and the beautiful melodies come out of the end of their fingers, that's not intuition. That's just drawing upon a wealth of information that's stored up in them. So it's fun to study the materia medica, and especially now when there's so many fantastic books and new materials and videos and other resources. So that's how I would use your materia medica. Make friends with it and study it and appreciate it, and no doubt it will help you in the clinic.
So, Linda, I'm just curious, because there is some movement in our community among some of the teachers that say basically, you know, you really don't need to learn the keynotes or the fundamentally important characteristic symptoms of the remedy, but you basically only need to know the themes within the context of the taxonomical groupings. But from what I'm hearing, what you're saying, you don't agree with that.
No, I don't agree with that because, you know, some of the best actors we have started out as Shakespearean actors in small playhouses. You know, they learned their craft. Or, again, somebody in acting or music, they do the exercises. So it's more, it's more fun to learn these themes, but you're still going to be confronted with the individual characteristics of a remedy. The themes are only to help limit to a smaller group of possibilities. And if you don't know those themes thoroughly and how they express themselves in the individual remedies, you're going to say, oh, it's family A, when actually it's family B. So you have to know the individual characteristics. And each of those individual characteristics also support the theme, the way that individual plant expresses that theme. So I've really, even to this day, I still spend time studying materia medica. And I can never learn enough. There's always more to learn. There's always more in the remedy. Even remedies I studied before, I can go back, let's say having learned a family theme, and I'll go back and I'll see certain rubrics, and I'll go, oh, now I understand that rubric. I understand that rubric expressing the theme in this individual way. So I would say that you can't just learn philosophy, you can't just learn case taking, you can't just learn materia medica. Those are each one leg of a three-legged stool. And if you're weak in one area, then the stool will be bobbly and you won't be able to perform your function.
Right. I was intrigued by your discussion earlier, the two of you living together and Franz now basically not practicing but mostly focusing on research, and Linda, you're the one from the two of you who is really focusing on your practice. Can you speak a little bit about the integration of the research and the clinical work together? I think it's a very interesting thing for people to hear about.
Well, Franz was 15 years a homeopath, and in the last 17 or 18 years has been exclusively research. So it's been quite some time that he's devoted himself to this, and anybody who's seen the shelf space his books takes can certainly attest to that. I think that what he provides for me is raw data information and rubrics and vetting the rubrics and vetting the information so that what I have is more accurate and more full or fuller. And I won't speak for him, but he has indicated to me that what I provide for him is that clinical confirmation, or to see how what he unearths actually I see it in the clinic or apply it in the clinic, and that gives feedback to him as far as the kind of work he does and how it's actually being applied. So from that standpoint, we have a really nice collaboration. I will often bring something of a case and ask his opinion, and he'll say, well, that sounds like this phytochemical, or that sounds like a theme from over this family, or that, you know, this is a rubric you have to consider from his vast knowledge. And other times I will come home and say, well, this is a remedy that worked in this case, and you know, see how it supports what you've taught me, or what the what you've taught me, or this aspect of the research, and it's less supportive of this other side of the research. Maybe you want to comment on that?
No, I agree fully. You worded that exactly as I would have.
So there you go, our collaboration.
Well, it's really a very exciting collaboration. You know, I'd like to open it up to let some other people ask questions as well, but before I do that, if you could just again share with us some of the things that are coming up for the two of you in the future in terms of, I know you mentioned you're going to be teaching in the Bay Area. What's the date again for that event?
It's Saturday, February 27th, and Sunday, February 28th.
Okay.
And then we have on April 23rd, 24th, and 25th, we will both be in Toronto, and that's the Toronto School of Homeopathy. And then, of course, as you said, in May, the LIGA conference, which is in near Los Angeles, the 18th through the 22nd, and I believe we're speaking on Thursday, the 20th. And those are the things that are there's other things in Germany and London and so forth, but those are the main ones that are more locally accessible.
Yeah, if you happen to be in the second half of the year in Europe, we will be in Germany and in Italy and in Czechia.
In where?
In October, in the Czech Republic.
Oh, fantastic. In Prague?
Yeah, in Prague.
Fantastic. By the way, I think I'm going to be in Toronto at the end of April, so perhaps we can get together for lunch or a meal or something.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh, right. Good.
So, fantastic. Is there anything else you would like to share before I open it up to the general audience?
Well, thank you for asking such great questions and giving us a chance to talk about our favorite topic.
Yes, I would.
You guys gave great answers.
I would like to throw in a little log again in the quiet waters.
Okay.
If I would be allowed.
We'd love you to do that.
Well, we are into this classification, so that is going to mean that certain things are going to move a little bit and sometimes a little much. For instance, I have raised the question, and well, clinic has to show whether this makes any sense to do it this way, but botanically, gelsemium, if you pronounce that in the American way, I believe you said gelsemium or something, but the Dutch would say gelsemium, traditionally was always placed in the Nuxvomica family, but there have always been...
Just for everybody knows, it's the Loganaceae family for everybody.
Right. And it will still stand there. In most of the homeopathic texts, including mine, it will say the Loganaceae is having gelsemium. But gelsemium recently, about 10 years ago, has been placed in a family of its own. And well, that made me think, and that made me look around in the homeopathic and botanical literature, and I saw that actually gelsemium's position has always been doubted, whether it was correct in the Loganaceae. And now, and you can read that back in Haywood. Haywood is one of the botanical sources usually used by homeopaths. And Haywood says, actually, gelsemium, if it would fit in a larger family than it has now for itself, which is very small, it would fit better in the oleander family than in the Nuxvomica family.
Franz, since you broached the subject and you threw the log, and I'm going to ride the wave, and could you just explain a little bit to people about the differences between the Dahlgren and Cronquist systems and the new APG2? And specifically, can you tell me a little bit about how APG3 is different from APG2?
Well, the traditional way of looking at plants, and that started with Linnaeus. Linnaeus, the Swedish botanist who started categorizing things according to a binomial system, so everything got two names, a first name and a second name. He divided things according to how they looked, so what he could see. And most of it was based on the morphology, the external appearance of the flower. the stamens, etc., all the different parts of the flower. And that would give rise to a certain division of plants. And that has been improved upon in the 1970s, 1960s, 1970s, 1980s by two Americans with Swedish names. One is called Kronqvist. He was from New York. And the other one was Rolf Dahlgren. And they developed further the idea of Linnaeus of placing plants in certain families based on their morphology, but it was more extended. So the leaves and the roots and the tissues, etc., all would be involved in that. 20 years after that, at the beginning of the 1990s in Sweden, a new development came where in the DNA structures, the genetic blueprints of plants are also included in the division. That's called APG, and that started in 1996 as APG1, then came in 2003, came APG2, and now recently is introduced APG3. The only difference with 2 is that it is more extended, more plants have been placed, because certain plants could not be placed by APG, so they were unplaced as to order, etc., unassigned, it would say, unassigned as to order, and that has now, most of it has been placed. So for the rest, it's not so much of a difference between 3 and 2. It's only more complete now.
Very interesting. So, you know, I have a million more questions. Perhaps you'll come back and join us again for another one of these very exciting, interesting interviews. But let me go ahead and open it up and let some other people ask some questions.
Sure.
So any questions for Franz Vermeulen or Linda Johnston?
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
You're going to give a website, Linda?
Say again, please.
You were going to give a website address?
A website address?
Was that for their seminar in San Francisco? Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, and other upcoming lectures.
Yeah, I gave an email address that you can email the organizer, Annika Hoagland. Would you like me to repeat that?
Please, I'm sorry, I must have missed it.
Okay, let me just find it again. It's going to take a moment. Just a sec.
It's called Homeopathy West.
Yeah, Homeopathy West, and it's... Yeah, Annika, AnnikeHoagland @gmail.com.
Fantastic. Great.
I hope to see you there.
Other questions for Linda Johnston and Franz Vermeulen?
Yes, I have a question.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Will you in the future look to a book on the elements?
Well, I'm so glad you asked that, because after the plant book comes the animal kingdom. That book is about a third the way done. And after that will be the minerals. And I was a biochemist in college, and I'm looking forward to the minerals a great deal. That's one of my favorite topics. So, yes, indeed we are. We've got a lineup of books coming.
You guys are going to write an encyclopedia before it's all over.
Yeah, that's the idea. We want to cover all the kingdoms.
Do you have a website yourself?
Well, I do have a website. It's about 4 years out of date, and I had intended to update it, but unfortunately this other plant book authoring had come in my way. So probably in the next 3 or 4 months I'll update that. But I have one now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a homeopathy-MD. No, wait a minute. Oh, gosh. It's homeopathy-MD.com. Homeopathy-MD.com. And that's my website. But that, and as
doesn't it have to have an ad or something?
Hmm?
You say, well, say it again. Repeat the URL for your website.
Homeopathy, HOMEOPATHY, and then a dash, not an underscore, just a dash, MD, and then it's .com.
Okay. All right, great.
Have you written a book on plant families already? And if you have, what is the name of it?
Is this for Franz or for me, Linda?
Whoever. I mean, are you working together on these books?
Yeah, well, yes. We are halfway now finished. We just sent it off this morning to the publisher, so it will have to be typeset, read, edited, blah, blah, and the whole thing.
Okay.
So that will be that contains 68 families we have finished, now completely finished. And the coming 3 to 4 to 5 months are meant for going to the other 70 families, which are in basically done, but Linda has to go through and put her clinical experience in it, so that will take some time. But the whole idea is that that will be now 2,500 pages that should be finished at the end of the year.
So in November, the first it'll be about 4 volumes for the plants, and the first 2 volumes will be ready by about November. And then 3 or 4 months later, the other remaining 2 volumes will be available. So, yes, that's what we're doing at the moment.
Fantastic. Franz, you know, I last year I was lecturing in the Netherlands, and I came across a Frank Muller. Do you know him? He has a small school up in Meppels.
I think I would should know him, but I'm not exactly sure whether you pronounce his name in the American Dutch way or the Dutch
I might be pronouncing it completely incorrectly.
All
but
right.
The reason I'm asking is because I don't speak Dutch, and he had just recently published a book on the composite.
All right. Yeah, then I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Okay, and I'm curious. Are you familiar with the book? And
yep.
Can you share us? Because I was curious about it myself, so... Can you tell us a little bit about it, or had you read it yourself? Or?
Well, of course, but it is in Dutch. And so what it has done, it has explored a number of the compositae, which, by the way, now are called Asteraceae, not compositae in the
sure,
law, but
sure.
Asteraceae. So they are called like that, and there are about 30 or 40, and the literature is investigated, et cetera, what there is available. But if you would look at the family as such, as we have done, the family is the largest one that we have, and actually it cannot be called one family, because it is very difficult to compare biochemically, chemically, botanically, even botanically, to compare a remedy like Arnica, which is part of that family, or Absinthium, which is also part of that family, or Sina, or Chamomile.
Sure.
Or millefolium. They're all part of that family, but they are so different that we have not considered that to be one family, but we have divided the family in 5 working groups, which we call tribes. That's a botanical name. So we have divided them in 5 tribes, which share symptoms and themes among each other, but not with the neighboring tribe. So that Dutch book hasn't done that. So, therefore, it is botanically a little bit incorrect, if I may call it like that. And homeopathically, you need to wrench a bit to get it all together under the type remedy of the family, which is Arnica.
Very interesting. I think we have time for more questions. So if you have one more question for Franz and Linda, that would be great.
Yes, we answered them all. They're so overwhelmed by the...
No, I might not have unmuted the line. Can people hear me now?
Coming out in November, what are they entitled?
We don't have a working title yet. It will. We're working on the title now, and but it's by Franz Remulen and Linda Johnson, and certainly one of the keywords in the title will be plants.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Well, again, thank you both very much. It was a wonderful interview, very informative, a lot of really excellent ideas and suggestions. And, again, we hope you'll rejoin us again for another one of these in the future. Can we everybody give Franz and Linda a big North American thank you for having shared their time with us this evening?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.